Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. We're back from Christmas break. Albert's here. Albert, you're not allowed to say that the best gift you got for Christmas was like the look in your child's eyes when they opened something. What was the best gift that you got for Christmas? I'm talking about real stuff, because that's what the holidays are all about. What'd you get?
It's about the material things.
It's about the material things.
Yeah, I would have said like getting to play video games with my kids was pretty cool. Just because like that was like my memory. I don't know if this was your memory, but my memory is like just playing, like not showering or changing all day, and just playing whatever video game I got until I passed out. You know, so that was my memory of my Christmases as a kid in the 80s and 90s. And as far as stuff I got, I don't know. My parents always give me and Emily a check, which is always like nice because I think I can earmark it for something. So maybe that will be it. So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Cash is good. Yeah.
They always feel like that's the best thing to do, which I agree with that. Like, I think that's a nice thing to do for somebody, even though like you're always nervous about giving somebody cash because it looks like you forgot. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, oh, let's just throw cash at the problem. But a lot of times it's like the most appreciated gift too, you know?
100%.
It's a weird thing that way.
I think like my grandmother has, I think at this point, like between kids and grandkids, I think there's like 20 kids, grandkids, and great grandkids. There's like 23, 24, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. And there is a set amount of money and it's divided, and either the gifts add up to that or you get a gift plus the remainder of that in cash. Or just cash. And so there, I don't think that, you know, I like the fact that it's thought out. It's something that you can depend on every year. And you're just like, oh man, mm-hmm. this is great. You know?
Yep. Yeah. I always do feel like it's like, if there was a point where I like tried to buy Emily clothes and I would always screw it
trap.
Up. And it would always be like awkward, because it would be like, she would like, I mean, especially when we were first dating, right? Like where it was like, if I tried to do something like that, she like felt like she had to sneak around me to return it and get something else. You know what I mean? Like, and then like you get to this point in your relationship where you're more logical about it. And it's like, I know she would rather just go buy something for herself. So I'll get her the gift card, like, and not mess with trying to, like, we're way past the point about like, oh, well, I got to put all this thought into the actual piece of, no, she would just rather buy it herself.
It's weird. It's like this weird biological thing that happens to husbands, like at a certain time in their relationship, where it's like, it makes sense for me to pick out clothes for my wife. And it like, and it's like 1 year and you do it once and then and then you never do it again. Yeah. You screw it up so badly.
And they sneak around you to return it.
Yes.
Like, get something else.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just like, at this point, it's like, how about the gift is a day of shopping for you or whatever you want to do? Like, I don't want to, like, you know, pigeonhole it, but like, hey, if you want to go get new clothes, like, I will watch the kids for the day. And
I can barely competently clothes shop for myself. So same. Like, you know, like I do not need to be like clothes shopping for a woman who has any sense of style.
Yes. Yeah. No, same. So this was, you know, we're going to get into the best of week 16 here. But just before we hopped onto the podcast, Russell Wilson got benched. And I do think that's important to address off the top. You had said, and we said we were going to save it for the podcast. Well, let me just back up, because I do want to say that I had a very prescient take in the power rankings. Before we knew that Russell Wilson was benched, I was writing about the Broncos game. And I said, I believed that you could tell it was the end for Russell Wilson in Denver when they got the ball. There was like a turnover right at the beginning of that game. They got the ball deep in Patriots territory right at the beginning of that game. And Russell Wilson almost throws a pick two plays later. And then on fourth down, they go for it. And it's a zone read. And so Russell gives the ball to the running back. If he would have taken that ball and either rolled out with the wide receiver or just ran it into the end zone, it's an easy score. But he, you know, and I think that there's probably something to the fact that he doesn't want to run as much anymore, doesn't want to put his body out there as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I don't know if that was the moment for Sean Payton, but boy, did it feel like it, where it was just like, okay, like, you're not doing what I ask you to do. You're not doing what you do well anymore. And so what is the point of having you on this team or having him as an active player on this team?
And I think too many people, like, their initial reaction is, well, he hasn't been that bad, and that's fair. But I mean, for what they're paying for him and what they owe him going forward, like, this shouldn't be a quarterback who has to be so heavily managed, you know? Like, and that's the whole thing. It's like, we're not talking about the player and whether or not the player has anything left, because I think Russell Wilson, you know, has shown this year some signs of life that he does have something left. It's just, we're talking about the contract. And I think it's like instructive for people to look at it this way. Because of the rolling guarantees in the contract, I won't bore people with what that means, but it basically means like guarantees in future years vest early. And so the way you want to look at his contract was, there was a series of buyouts. The buyout after this year is $39 million, which, that's what he's guaranteed next year. The problem with keeping him on the roster for next year is that if you keep him on the roster for next year, then $37 million will vest for 2025. So you're essentially looking at the same buyout if you hold on to him for another year. So whatever that, like, you know, the medicine you have to take for getting rid of him is the same this year as it is next year. So if you're going to do it eventually, you might as well just do it now. And I don't know if I explained that simply enough. Like, I'm trying to do the explain it to a 5-year-old thing here, like, because it is a complicated thing. But, you know, like, they had to make a decision. And the crazy thing about it, Connor, is you think about what they gave up, right? So it was 2 ones and 2 twos, I believe, right? Okay, so they wound up giving up a top 5 pick, right? 2 top 10 picks. So one of those picks in the top 5, one of them was in the top 10. And I believe the other two were like top 40 picks, right?
Not to mention Noah Fant, who, you know, I think in another, like, I think he's a good tight end. And when he gets the ball in Seattle, Pete Carroll just loves having 9 tight ends. You know, I think Noah Fant's probably a half decent player. And I mean, Drew Locke looked better in those 2 starts than Russell Wilson did the entire time in Denver.
And those picks became Charles Cross, who's a franchise left tackle, and Devin Witherspoon, who looks like a number one corner.
Not bad.
I mean, and on top of that, like, with all those picks gone, did you know, Connor, that The Broncos are now on the hook for $124 million for the 2 years they had of Russell Wilson when they got the contract, right? There was 2 years left on the contract at $51
million. Oh.
So they paid a $73 million premium to get him signed long-term, and he didn't even get to one of the new years in the contract. Like, they had him under contract when they traded him for these 2 years, and they paid a $73 million premium on those 2 years so they could have him signed through, I believe it was 7 years. So this is a Herschel Walker train wreck. Right?
Oh, it's bad. And I think what's frustrating about it too is that now that the you pull the sheet off the whole thing, you know, I do think that we have sort of gone through this process where we looked at everything in black and white and we said, okay, everyone that was a part of the Broncos in 2022 is an idiot. And now, you know, but now I think in hindsight, it's like, how wasn't more of a finger pointed at the GM throughout this entire thing? Like,
yeah.
Imagine if you had, like, let's just say you had the Seahawks picks. So you got Devin Witherspoon, you got Charles Cross, and then, I don't know, you eventually, you know, you had Garrett Bowles and Charles Cross on two sides, and you had Pat Surtain and Devin Witherspoon on two sides of your team. And then it doesn't matter. You could put Joe Flacco back there and you could win 9 games. Like, you would finish in second place in the division with that.
Or
team.
Do you want to really get Broncos fans depressed?
Sure.
Or you trade up for CJ Stroud.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just funny to me that the football is politics ultimately. And I do think, you know, I do think that there was a great job in Denver being like, nah, it's that guy's fault. He doesn't know what he's doing. He can't coach quarterbacks. And now Sean Payton comes in with cachet. And when he says, yeah, this guy sucks, I don't want to play him anymore, everyone's like, oh, yeah, you're right. He does suck, you know, and he is bad.
And that was why I felt like when they fired Hackett last year, I felt like the big thing was they needed somebody who could stand up to Russell Wilson, right? And if you look, I think that they sort of went along those lines. Because look at who they were looking at. DeMeco Ryans, who certainly could, right?
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh, who certainly could.
David Shaw.
And then Sean Payton, who did.
Yeah.
And I think like that sort of illustrates what a crisis this was for the organization last year. And if you think about like the history of it too, and we really want to kind of dig into the weeds on it, was this like settling because you felt like you had to get one because the team was for sale and you missed out on your first choice? Right?
I guess. You know,
because wasn't your first choice Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you missed out because everything was sort of pointed towards Aaron Rodgers in 2022 for them. And then Rodgers, you know, comes to the agreement with the Packers and, you know, decides to stay there for the extra year. And how different does that look for Nathaniel Hackett and for George Payton and for the new ownership group if Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback?
When really, you know, it's funny, like you should have this team needed to be and still needs to be. This team has needed to be rebuilt for 5 years.
Oh, and Aaron Rodgers, by the way, who blew his Achilles, would have been playing on grass then.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good NFL moment. I don't know.
Don't mean to throw that one in there, but if you're into the turf grass thing and you really want to dig into this one, then yeah, Aaron Rodgers would have been playing his home games on grass.
Russell is interesting to me now because it's sort of like a Carson Wentz situation on steroids where I'm sure that he is undoubtedly better than 90% of the backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
But how do you make him a backup quarterback in the NFL? Like, I think that there's all kinds of problems. I think that if I have a young starter, I don't want Russell Wilson behind him
And that's the thing is like, would the logical thing be like, okay, like go to Chicago and be Caleb Williams Bridge? But do you want him around Caleb Williams? You know what I mean? Like, so like, I sort of look at it that way too, like where it's like, Now, like the next step for him, okay, so he won't fit in anywhere as a backup. Like, if he's going to be a bridge starter, can you do that? You know what I mean? With everything that he brings with you, is that the right guy to be the bridge? Because ideally, you want the guy to, you want your bridge to still be able to play. So you have the flexibility, of course, to sit the young guy if he needs that. But on top of that, like, you want him to be like the right sort of influence on your young guy, too.
Right.
You know,
it's, you know what it is? It's like the weirdest combination of it's like Baker plus Wentz plus Tebow almost, because Russell also does bring like the aura of
Russell Wilson Inc.
And yeah. So there's that. There's, you know, what is he giving to a locker room? And I, you know, Russell is, you know, I don't want to like drag his name through the weeds. I mean,
he's not like a bad guy, but
the,
it's just
the
like,
charity work he does is incredible. He's a good, you know, like,
yeah, he's not like, we're not saying that, like, and it's easy to poke fun at him and everything else. He's not a bad guy. It's just, you know, like we said this with Tebow too, like, right? Like, there's just a lot that comes with him. And I think the correct way to look at it, Connor, is if somebody brings a lot extra with him, he better be worth it. Right. Like, so there are certain guys like Cam Newton brought a lot of extra stuff with him, but Cam Newton was worth it. Right. And then
for a time.
Right. Like, so there are certain guys that just, they bring a lot of extra stuff with them, and that's not even negative stuff. A lot of times, again, like Tebow, Cam, like, wasn't really negative stuff. It's just, there was a lot that came with them. And so when the guy's not a top shelf player, and a guy you want to build around, can he be? And it's that goes back to that whole thing. Like, you want your backups to be to like sort of blend in with the furniture,
right?
You don't want the backup to be the biggest personality or the biggest celebrity in the locker room, because that can cause problems. And again, it's not even the player's fault in a lot of those cases, but it's sort of the reality of Russell Wilson. Like, could this be the end of his career, Connor?
I mean, I was just going to joke, like, God, he's going to make a great Patriot. He's just going to be the perfect. Yeah. But like, where?
But Bill, and I thought about that too. But Bill might not be there anymore.
Right. And what do the Patriots, you know, they're going to take on whatever, you know, they're going to take on whatever personality the new head coach takes on. I would say this. I'm trying to look up and down here at where Russell Wilson could fit that would even make some degree of sense. And like, you know, like, could you put him like if you're Vegas, would you do it? If you're a team, like if you're Pittsburgh, would you do it? I don't think.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess you'd have to be one of these teams that needs a quarterback, but is too good to get one in the draft. Right.
You'd have, like, to be a team that needs a quarterback, like, that can't get one in the draft, and that has a dominant, either you already have a dominant quarterback and Russell knows he's coming in a support role, or you have a dominant head coach that is the complete and total unquestioned tone setter. I mean, it's Pittsburgh. Yeah, Pittsburgh. It's Pittsburgh. Gosh.
I mean, Vegas, depending on who the head coach is. Like a little like Jim Harbaugh, Russell Wilson thing in Vegas. That'd be fun.
Yeah. And you know, you bring in Greg Roman, you would assume that they can put together, if Russell wants to play that kind of ball, like you could put an offense together that probably makes some semblance of sense.
I mean, because I think he can still play.
The Giants?
God. That's interesting. Like, but I mean, they're on the hook for Daniel Jones for next year, so like that would really screw that whole thing up. I don't think so. The Giants don't make sense. I mean, I think for that reason, the Giants wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's like really hard. The Saints, like if they move on from Derek Carr and then like because of the offsets, they get Russell Wilson cheap. Like, you know, I got to look at the rules, but I don't think Russell Wilson can double dip. So whoever would sign him would be able to get him at the minimum, probably, just because Denver's on the hook for the rest of it, right?
God, so, if they didn't like Derek Carr down there, they're not going to like Russell.
I know, but yeah, I don't even know that he'd be an upgrade over Derek Carr, though. I think Derek Carr's probably a better player.
I mean, Derek Carr, We'll get to this. I actually looked it up the other day. Over the last 6 weeks of the season, has been a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, Atlanta.
Oh, God. Poor Arthur Smith. Just get Justin Fields. Just let's.
I mean, Atlanta. I mean, I will give Arthur Smith did resurrect Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee.
He did.
So, I mean, there could be a let's throw Russell Wilson and Justin Fields into a competition. And, you know, like that, like that's like sort of interesting. Like, cause I do think like Arthur would be able to, like, my guess would be Arthur would like level with him and be like, look, like if you're going to come in here, like we're not going to do any of the extra stuff, right? Like you're coming here to play football and that's it. And like, I do think like there would be a very, and that's a team that I think is actually close to, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about them, but I think that team's actually really close to really winning, you know, and the quarterback situation has sort of sunk them, but like they're pretty good pretty much everywhere else, you know? So that's a team that I think, you know, like at least could take a swing on something like that. If, again, and that's why I think this may be like, they may cut them and they're going to cut them in February or whatever. It'll be official in March. And then, I mean, Do you look at it like, all right, this is going to be like a May 15th signing? You know what I mean? Would it be something like that?
Something like
after
that.
I'm saying after the draft, right?
Yeah. You don't get who you want, you know, and you know, at that point, like maybe even, you know, you see some of these guys come in at the end of training camp, right? Where, you know, you can avoid the whole like drag of publicity and all that stuff and really just instill in him that like, hey, you are here in case something goes catastrophically wrong and we need a replacement level starter. Like that's it.
Right.
The Vikings.
Yeah. I could see, I think O'Connell would have the personality to make that, could have the personality to make that work. But if you're them, wouldn't you rather have Cousins back? I mean, yeah, unless you look at it and you say, we're going to be able to get Russell Wilson so cheap that like it's actually going to help us.
Have him back up Cousins, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Have him back up Cousins. Russell Wilson can learn the Rams offense. Right. And that would,
I think they were draft classmates, weren't they? Third and fourth round in 2012. I'm pretty sure.
That's right. Yeah.
I think that's right.
All right.
So they probably know each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet
Bill Belichick. How about Bill Belichick and the Washington Commanders with Russell Wilson as their bridge quarterback?
Jeepers. I'm never like Joe Flacco's about to go on a run to the AFC Championship game. I'm never going to rule anything out anymore. Like it's just the NFL algorithm is insane. The 49ers lost to the Ravens 33-19 on Christmas night. Brock Purdy threw four interceptions. The Ravens started that game with Lamar Jackson tripping over an official in the end zone and taking a safety. I thought they were cooked, and they came out and played the best game that they've played all year. I thought Lamar Jackson looked awesome, and in a Super Bowl preview, the Ravens absolutely dominated who we thought was the best team in the league. I don't know. What did you take away from this one?
I mean, so I talked to Patrick Queen right after the game, and he said something to me that I thought was fascinating. He said, we play a brand of football no one else wants to play. And I thought like that basically encapsulates like why the Ravens should be very, very dangerous. You know, they play a different style of football. They're more physical than most teams. You know, the other thing he said to me was like, when you watch the Niners on tape, what you see is, they don't think anybody wants to tackle them for four quarters. It basically meaning like over time, having to get Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle to the ground is going to wear you out, and we're going to run away with it in the fourth quarter. And, you know, like the fact that they're able to play this different style and what it looked like going against maybe what is the second most physical team in football in the Niners, right? You'd say that behind the Ravens now.
Yeah.
I think shows what a bitch they're going to be to deal with in January and how it's not like quite like service academy football, you know, like where it's just they're, you know, the college teams, you like a lot of teams see like big time college teams that go and play Army or Navy and they'll like struggle because, or at least for a little while struggle because it's, they have to adjust to like just a totally different style of football. It may not be to that degree, but based on like the Ravens and what Greg Roman built there in the run game for all of those years, and then how Todd Monken has sort of moved that forward, and then what they are on defense and the changes that Wink Martindale made there a few years ago and what Mike McDonald has added as the new coordinator. Yeah, I think it's just created this mix where, I mean, you see it, and I think you saw it on Monday night. I think you saw it earlier in the year when they blew the Lions off the field. I think you saw it earlier in the year when they blew the Seahawks off the field. It's like if you are not prepared to play a certain style of football, like they're going to stuff you in a locker pretty quick. And that, I think, was what was most impressive was they took the most physical team in football, presumably going into that game, which was the Niners, and said, no. We're the most physical team. And I know that that sounds a little simplistic, but I think that's sort of what it is. It's just they're a very, very difficult team to reckon with right now.
And you combine that with what has been sort of a stunning, you know, I wrote this a couple of weeks ago that I just can't imagine when Lamar Jackson was like, quote unquote, available, when the Ravens placed the non-exclusive franchise tag on him. And I understand the durability concerns, and Russell still does run about twice as often as Patrick Mahomes. So the injury risk is there. But I would say that he runs like Patrick Mahomes this year in that it's not a run because that's what I'd prefer to do. It's like a run because, okay, I don't see anything else and here's a window and I'm going to take it and I'm going to pick up a first down. But he's playing football like he did at Louisville. I mean, he's dealing the ball. And what Todd Monken's been able to do is install a system that I think Russell has been telling all of us for years that he was capable of running. And everyone was like, no, you're better doing this and just throwing your body in front of the truck.
You said Russell, you mean Lamar.
Oh my gosh.
It's okay.
Slip.
It's okay. Lamar. Let's keep going.
Yes. And you know, instead of throwing his body in front of the cement truck every week, that one touchdown against San Francisco, watch him. He moves the defense, looks everybody off and looks open his receiver. I mean, he's an elite NFL quarterback on the ground and with his arm. And it just blows my mind that nobody else was like, yeah, I could probably do that with that guy.
I think this is where we also give credit to like Eric DaCosta and Joe Ortiz and their personnel department too, right? Because, I mean, like they lost their number one skill player, probably their number one and number two skill players coming into the year, what a lot of people thought they were and what they have been for the last couple of years when healthy, which is Mark Andrews and J.K. Dobbins, right? Like they lose those two guys and they have so much more depth now than they have the last few years. And what Zay Flowers has become almost right away as an NFL player, what Odell Beckham has brought to the table, which isn't what he was 5 years ago, but is still a guy you got to account for. Isaiah Likely being able to draft him, you know, Gus Edwards, like the depth they have at the skill positions now, like there's actually like there's guys around Lamar, like better than there have been in the past. And, you know, I think it just and I think you look at the way that the team's put together and so much of it's so logical, you know, it's just, it feels like it's a really good organization that this year in particular is firing on all cylinders with a couple new coordinators and with some new players in the roster. And now we're seeing like, all right, this is what prime Lamar looks like.
I'm not, you know, even now, right? Like everything changes again. And I think that the 49ers are more than capable of adjusting if they see Baltimore again. And I wouldn't expect that the game goes exactly the way it does. But I do think that we can confirm the fact that, okay, the Ravens kind of won the regular season title. They are the best NFL team of this regular season. I don't think it's close. They walked out of the toughest division. They are by far the best team in the most difficult division in the NFL. They beat the best teams in the NFL with regularity, and they've improved in all facets. I
also think I would say they have the three best wins of the season, just as far as like when you weigh the score, the eye test, and then the opponent. Like, I think their wins over the Niners, the Lions, and the Seahawks are the three best wins in the NFL this season. The Niners, obviously, being able to do that on the road the way they did for everything that happened on Monday night. And then just the sheer dominance of, like, really good teams in the Lions and Seahawks. I think those might be the three best wins that any team has in the league this year.
I still like the 49ers as in the Super Bowl. Is that bad? I still like the 49ers.
I don't know. You might wind up on a bulletin board like Mike Florist. Is that right? Mike Florist, I think. Is.
The fact that anybody, I forget, there was Mike Florio does a great job of Pro Football Talk. I think he wrote something about how the 49ers were going to just pulverize the.
So they were going to kick their ass, I think was the verbiage.
Something
maybe.
Like that. Yeah. And the idea that. I love this ecosystem that we're in, that all players are like, these writers have no idea what they're talking about. But then somehow, if we have an loud enough opinion, it gets back and serves as some sort of legitimate morsel of disbelief in the team, which is hilarious to me. Like, I mean, it got to the point where Nick Saban used to make them up. He used to make like he would.
What,
he
there
would,
was a story about like a championship game where he like had fake newspaper clips or something.
And
like
and it
that.
Was and right. it was so obviously fake. It was like he wrote on the bulletin board, national media : Alabama too soft to win national title. And like Alabama had won like 40 consecutive games at that point. And we were just like, who is saying that?
I think find me one person. I think the crux of that story, wasn't it, that like Alabama got so good that there was no bulletin board material.
There was nothing. Could find or something. Yeah. He literally made it up. I mean,
he couldn't, like, there was no way like that he could find anything at that point to like fire his team up. And he calls it rat poison, right? Like when people say good things about his team, but clearly he looks at it the opposite way when people say negative things about his group. And I just wish, like, I wish people got to see, shout out to our editor, Mitch Goldich, how I fill out my pick sheet and the amount of effort that I put into it every week, because I can't say that it's a lot, Connor.
I'd
say of all my acts at work, that's probably the thing I put the least effort into.
I am at the point now in our weekly picks column where we're all just chasing Claire. And Claire has been like phenomenal. Another one of our great editors. And I think she's something like 30-20, on upset picks. Like she has like, she's just had a phenomenal season. And I think her and Mitch are very close to being in first place together. So now what I do is I pick the complete opposite of whatever Claire and Mitch pick in a very desperate attempt to try to close ground. So I think I have like 11 upset picks this week or something.
Dude,
like that.
I hate to tell you, but I just found this out. I'm actually leading Claire by six.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Right after you said you don't even care about it.
She's 152-88. No, now I care.
now it matters.
I'm also 21-19 in my upset picks.
Wow.
I'm the only person with a winning record in the upset pick.
I have the
so
most.
So did you mistake me for Claire?
I might have mistaken you for Claire.
I'm actually kind of flattered.
I have the most upset picks though. Nobody has gotten more upset picks correctly than I have. But don't tell anyone. Nobody has gotten more wrong than I have either. So that's.
Oh yeah, you do. You definitely. God, that's like a pretty wide margin too.
Yeah, I'm. That's the part. Like, if I
you're rolling the dice a lot, huh?
Once I get fired,
a lot of money lines being played here.
Yeah, once I get fired and I start my gambling podcast, I'm gonna be like, no one at Sports Illustrated correctly picked more upsets in the 2023 season than me, and I'm just gonna leave out the fine print there.
So, just to put this in perspective for our listeners here, Connor has picked 70 upsets this year. I have picked 40. So I have picked. You picked almost double the amount of upsets I picked this year.
What am I?
I'm
30 and 40
either.
I'm 30 and 40 in upset picks.
You're 26-44.
Oh, God.
I'm 21-19. So I have almost as many upset picks correct in out of 40 as you have out of 70.
Yeah, it's not. It's not quite what.
Am
you
I want. The most conservative? I might be the most conservative. No. John Plume has 38. So John Plume is the most conservative. No. Oh, no. Matt Verderami is the most conservative. He only has 29 upset picks. So I'm not the most conservative.
Golly.
But Claire does have the most upset wins. She has 28. You have 26. I have 21.
Okay. So let's keep that in mind when we're talking about, quote-unquote, prospective bulletin board material. I don't know what I'm talking about.
If you're looking to play the odds this week with, you know, a sharp like me, right? Because I'm 21-19 in my upset picks. I've got three upsets this weekend: Packers over Vikings, Falcons over Bears, Lions over Cowboys. Take it to the bank,
dude. I went completely bananas this weekend because, again, I'm just trying to make up so much ground. So I'm lone wolfing, meaning I'm the only person picking
So Mitch goes in and he bowls the upset picks, right? Like Connor's whole freaking row is bold. Like the whole thing.
Packers over the Vikings. I have the Chargers over the Broncos. Wow. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers over
Patriots
the Seahawks.
Patriots over the Bills. Still hanging on.
But, right? I mean, like, that is such a Sean McDermott thing to do. Is to lose that game to the Patriots.
The Ravens beat the Dolphins to open the door, and then... The door shuts.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked myself into all of it. And how about?
But no, you don't even have that happy. You have Miami winning too.
The Cardinals beating the Eagles. Come on, Jonathan Gannon knows exactly what to do to Jalen Hurts.
Let me ask you: do you believe all these upsets, or is this just an effort to catch up?
It started as an effort to catch up, but then what I do is I very quickly intellectually rationalize all of them, and then put myself in the intellectual high ground. So I'm saying to myself, okay, I'm the only one who picked the Cardinals over the Eagles. However, the Eagles are in kind of a tailspin, and Jonathan Gannon knows how to stop Jalen Hurts better than anyone else. He could probably do something weird defensively, and then all of a sudden, Kyler Murray has a good game. You know, it's not impossible. Like, none of these are impossible. Also, the Browns, you know, if Quinnen Williams gets loose in this game and just like breathes on Joe Flacco, he could break two of his ribs. I'm just saying.
I didn't realize you picked the Cardinals over the Eagles. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying. But
I mean, that just feels like you're trolling everybody. By the way, we don't pick against the spread.
No, thank you. But we do. So also for our listeners, we do have a separate with our gambling vertical. We have an expert roundtable where every week a couple of us do picks against the spread. I am 2-12 this year. 2-12. That's not even like, I mean, that's horrifying. If I were to actually spend money on gambling and football, my family wouldn't have a house. That's how bad I am at that. Nobody should listen to me. Bad takes. So anyway, the fact that I'm saying that the Ravens, I think, would lose a second game to the 49ers, probably great news for the Ravens, your eventual Super Bowl champions. Let's move on because we got a lot to cover here. And some of these we can just kind of go through pretty quickly, but when we're talking about most consequential games of the weekend, you know, the Rams and the Saints started us off with Rams 130-22. They're now 8-7. Them and the Seahawks, who barely squeaked by the Titans. We have this fun little NFC West kind of battle between these two teams to try to back into the playoffs. I know you liked the Seahawks to start the season. I think you had them winning the division, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't have them winning the division, but I had them as like the surprise, like the dark horse Super Bowl. Like, could they make it? Yeah.
Yeah. But I am ready to pose to you that I think that we should retire our interest in the Seahawks and we should go all in on the Rams. This is a more fun team to watch. They have a better quarterback. And I think the Rams are totally capable of completely screwing up the playoffs and knocking off like a number one seed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Rams are going to be a problem because I think you look at like their coaching staff and like how well put together it is and like all the experience those guys have, and you know, then I think you look at how this is like a team coming into the year that was carrying $75 million in dead money. And I think at one point they had like 19 rookies on their 53-man roster. So it's like they've already fought through all of that. And now it looks like they're ascending. And, you know, you look at like the young guys on their defensive front, like Byron Young. You look at the, you know, obviously like in the skill position group, like Puka Nacua and, you know, Kyren Williams isn't a rookie anymore. But effectively, this is his first full year as an NFL player. It just like looks like in a lot of different areas, the Rams are going to continue getting better. And they already have a guy in Matthew Stafford who I think is playing great football again, who looks like he's having fun again, who looks healthy again, and is at his healthiest as he's been as a Ram, including the Super Bowl year. And God, you put all this together, and I don't think anybody wants to see them in the playoffs, including the Niners. Like, I think they're going to be a bad draw for someone in the first round, and obviously because they're not going to win the division because the Niners already clinched that. They're going to be going on the road in the first round. But, you know, if you're the Lions, do you want to see Matthew Stafford coming into that building on the second weekend in January? I would say no.
What? And then,
because that, by the way, is what it looks like it's going to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of the, what were your, you know, I'll lump the Seahawks and the Rams together. My takeaway from the Rams is that I'm just amazed at this point that, you know, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, someone like Kyren Williams, it's really hard to be a running back in that offense because you're not just an outside zone team. You're not just a mid zone team. You're not just a gap scheme team. You're basically, and this is true of a lot of NFL teams, but the Rams are running like a graduate level running offense that basically peels the most out of like five or six really good successful schemes, and they're just gashing people with it. But you have to be really smart. You have to be really versatile. And here they pick a guy out of the fifth round that's able to do this. And I feel like that's what they've been doing, not only at the running back position, but, you know, middle linebacker, at your cornerback, you know, all these spots, they're adequately filling valuable roster space, you know, Puka Nacua, second wide receiver, with mid-level, mid-round talent, and it's just, it's super impressive. I mean, it's really cool.
I think it's interesting because it's sort of similar to what the Niners have done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying, like, these guys are going to become Fred Warner or Debo Samuel or George Kittle, but I think it's sort of a result of, like, a coaching staff knowing exactly what it's looking for and giving the personnel department the tools. And this is what, like, the Patriots were when they were firing on all cylinders, right? Like, when you have a head coach who knows exactly what he wants in every position and it's so well defined, it allows you to go out and like look through a narrower lens at like, okay, like this is exactly what we're looking for. And for the Niners, it was Fred Warner, right? Like, who was, I believe, like a safety linebacker hybrid at BYU. And they're looking at him and they're saying, okay, like this guy really fits what we want. George Kittle, like, needed some work as a blocker coming out, but like showed like, okay, he can be a very real pass catcher coming out of Iowa. Debo Samuel, like the type of guy that you can move around and play in different positions and is really good after the catch. I just think, you know, like you look at the Rams and the way they're able to identify guys like Ernest Jones, guys like Byron Young, guys like Kyren Williams, guys like Puka Nacua, who maybe had more value to them than any other team. And that doesn't mean you think you're going to be the guy's going to be a superstar when you're taking him in the fourth or fifth round, but you have like a vision for him already when he's coming in. And that, by the way, is also the power of continuity, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Like, if you're drafting into one system under one coach for an extended period of time, well, that gives you a huge advantage because that means you're not dealing with guys who are drafted by two or three different people where you're trying to fit every guy into, you know, into maybe a role that he wasn't drafted for in the first place. So I think it's really impressive the way that the Rams have sort of flipped their roster over the last 2 years. And, you know, and now they've got, again, like they're going to go into next year. And this is, I know this is moving two steps ahead, but I think they're going to have $40 or $50 million in cap space and they're going to have their first round pick for the first time in 9 years or 8 years or whatever it's going to be. They're set up to be like the aggressor again this offseason, which is really, really interesting.
Any thoughts on the Seahawks game? I mean, I just think if they can't run the ball effectively with Geno, they just take away that dimension to the point where it doesn't make sense. I mean, their offense is very Rams inspired, and I think if you're Kenneth Walker and you're gaining 3.4 yards carry, it just stops a lot of the stuff that you can do dead in its tracks. And I mean, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, as good as he is a lot like Cooper Kupp in my mind, that he is at his best when the run game is working well because he's so intricately tied in with the way everything works there. And so, you know, if you know, credit to the Titans. They're a tough team to play in that regard. But, you know, I'm just a little bummed. I mean, I thought I wanted like a big Seattle season, and I don't think I'm getting that. And the QB injuries hurt, you know, but it's at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I wanted more.
I still think, but don't you still think that like they're headed in the right direction? Like you look at the players they have, and it just, I don't know. Like it feels to me like there's still like a team that's like going the right way, you know, like a lot of their best players are really young and, you know, we can argue about Geno. I think Geno's a pretty competent veteran quarterback, a good bridge. Like I sort of view him like as what like Alex Smith was in Kansas City, you know, like sure. Where it's like he's gonna get you to the next guy eventually. And I still really like their young talent. Like they keep hitting on draft picks, you know, and between like Walker and Charbonnet at running back and Metcalf still pretty young and Smith and Jigba at receiver and Cross and Lucas at tackle and, you know, on defense with Witherspoon and, you know, all the Boye Mafe, like all the young guys that they have on that side of the ball. It feels to me like it's still a team that's going in the right direction, but it's been bumpier this year than we expected it to be.
The Steelers beat the Bengals 34-11 on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I love the narrative that like, okay, Mike Tomlin, why didn't you just go with Mason Rudolph all along? Mason Rudolph, George Pickens scored like an 84-yard touchdown, which accounted for like a third of his total passing yards. And it was on a quick slant, and the entire Bengals defense was just totally out of position. And there was nobody there. Like two guys bumped into each other. Like it's how that happens sometimes. You can't tell me that Kenny Pickett or Mitch Trubisky couldn't have made that throw, right? Like they've run a lot of quick slants to George Pickens. It just so happens that this one, everybody, you know, tripped and fell. I don't know what the future is for Mason Rudolph, but I will say my observations here were that I was more impressed with Pittsburgh's second drive when they went up 14-0 because that was just an efficient offensive performance. It mixed in a lot of different players. Mm-hmm. It forced Mason Rudolph to play small ball. He didn't get any, you know, didn't get the big play. And then you score again on a really good defense. And you have Najee Harris kind of like bowling his way into the end zone towards the end zone at the end of that drive. So that to me is more of a complete Steeler victory. I don't know what's going to happen in this division at this point. To me, it looks like the Jake Browning thing is kind of flamed out. And if you don't get an A-plus performance from your defense, it's not going to matter. But long-term, the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You just
well, you're looking at it like, I mean, the long-term view of the whole thing is like, you know, on one side, you got Jake Browning flaming out, but like, they're going to have Joe Burrow back this
year. Right, doesn't matter.
Like, so it's not like that like edge that they have on Saturday is in any way sustainable. I sort of look at the Mason Rudolph thing and I just say to myself, like, what a great luxury to have a backup, have a third string quarterback who's been there for 6 years. You know what I mean? Like that you can just – and I think it's like a good – probably like I think the best way to look is like a good piece of team building that it was like worth bringing Mason Rudolph back. So – you know, like you can at least get level at the quarterback position, which I think is all they really needed. Because Mitch Trubisky was so bad, you know, at the end, it was like, let's just get a guy in there who can bring us to level ground. And I think that's like what Mason Rudolph was able to do, which allows you to get more out of George Pickens, which allows you to play a game that's going to be more conducive to what you're trying to do on defense. The other narrative that was great was like, oh, see, like George Pickens just shoved it in all of your faces as if it was okay for him to like quit on a run play and jump over the pile.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like it, we can do dumb things and then great things. And those can both be part of the picture. One does not excuse or erase or negate the other, you know, but that's how we live in a week to week NFL world, especially with idiot people on social media being allowed to have accounts. The Bills beat the Chargers 24-22. I'm going to be honest, like every victory in the NFL is well earned and you should just count it as that. But after the Chargers got 62 hung on them by Vegas and then fired their coach, I thought this team would be deader than dead. And I'm a little surprised that Buffalo looked kind of mediocre in this game. And they were another team, too, that benefited from a huge play. I mean, that Gabe Davis touchdown was massive. Without that, do they fly across the country and get beaten by the Chargers? I don't know.
Yeah, you get a little of like the dead cat bounce, I guess, with the Chargers, which I think I've used that term before. I'll give Tom Curran credit for that term. It's pretty descriptive, and I think it kind of can describe the interim coach thing sometimes.
But that one in particular, like a lot of other teams go to like the firebrand, like you're the Browns and you fire Hugh Jackson and you just let Greg Williams, like the craziest person on earth, be the interim head coach. The Chargers fire Brandon Staley, and then is the interim head coach's name Jif?
Gif Smith.
Gif. Like
right. It's like a GIF with an extra F, right?
Yeah, it's like the web file with an additional F. Yeah.
Right.
Like you didn't throw in Kellen Moore. You didn't throw in like who do they have?
Their defensive coordinator?
Yeah,
is Derek Ainsley, right? Isn't it?
And then they have all right, this is bad Mike Francesa like in show Googling, but I'm trying to also talk while Googling Chargers
while
coaching
Googling
staff.
To delay for your
I'm taking every Jif Smith. There was a there was like a notable former player on this.
But Derek Ansley, the defensive coordinator?
Yeah. I mean, you know, why not? By the way, do you know who's on that staff? You know who's an offensive assistant on the Chargers?
Who?
Pat White.
The West Virginia Pat White?
Yeah. Very cool.
Doug Nussmeier on that staff too. He would be potentially a candidate. I mean, I think like the reason they didn't go with like Kellen Moore there is because they want to start over and they didn't want to make like I felt the same way about Chris Tabor getting the job in Carolina, right? Like instead of going with Ejiro Evero there, is like when ownership wants to start over, the last thing they need is for some young hotshot coach to come in and just crush it.
Right.
And make it so much harder for them to move on, you know?
Right.
Like, and I think like last year the Panthers went through that like with Steve Wilks, like legitimately like there was a good argument to keep him on as the head coach after the year, which made it harder for Carolina to move away from it. So I think they went the other way this year. So instead of promoting Ejiro Evero, they just say, like, let's give it to Chris Tabor so we can hit the reset button hard in the offseason. And I sort of feel like this is the same thing with the Chargers, where it's like they use that word reimagining. I think they're going to be reimagining things this offseason. And they didn't want, like, Kellen Moore getting hot at the end of the year to get in the way of that.
What would you be more scared of? Would you be more scared if you were Josh McDaniels of losing to Jeff Saturday in his first game, like 6 days after he left television to do the like Tom Hanks in Big and pretend he was an NFL football coach? Or would you be more scared of losing to a man named Gif?
I mean, I guess like I guess you like the whole thing like under the cover of night, like people maybe certain people wouldn't notice that you lost to a guy named Gif, whereas like if you lost to Jeff Saturday, it's headlines everywhere.
Everybody
right?
noticed that. Yeah. I think I would just I'd be like looking across the field and I'd like did you ever the Jets run Hard Knocks and there was the when they played the Giants in the preseason and it was the first time that Victor Cruz had walked on the field and there was a clip of then Jets defensive coordinator Mike Pettine watching Victor Cruz walk onto the field and saying, "Who the hell is that? Are they playing an option quarterback?" No idea who Victor Cruz was. And not that he should. I mean, there is a preseason game. It doesn't matter. But like that would be like I would be like coaching and I'd be like, "All right, we got the Chargers this week. And then like Friday afternoon, I'd be like, "Who the hell is coaching the Chargers?" Like, can someone get me that information? And then what do we know? And then I would have done the same thing. I'd have been like, is his name pronounced Gif? Jif? Mm-hmm. I can't lose to a guy.
I'm looking at his history now. He was brought to the NFL, it looks like, by Chan Gailey when Chan Gailey went from Georgia Tech to the Bills in 2010.
From Mableton, Georgia.
Yep. I think we're probably on the same Wikipedia page. 55 years old. Georgia Southern graduate. And you know, like, I do think to some degree, it's like, I think if you lost to Jeff Saturday, it's not like you would be happy for Jeff Saturday, right? Maybe as like a guy who's in the industry.
It's true. You'd be like, this is nice for Gif Smith.
Right. Like the career assistant, like he's got like a nice thing that he'll be able to remember forever.
Yeah, whereas, he's hanging like, on the wall. Yeah.
You wouldn't think of that with like Jeff Saturday at all.
For sure.
Like you'd be like, I can't believe I lost this guy who's never coached before, you know?
The Falcons turn it on 29-10 over the Colts. Taylor Heinicke looked really good, and all the Colts players and Shane Steichen were saying after the game, you know, I watched some of the post game stuff too, is that, you know, and you can see it. Taylor Heinicke did a really nice job of moving in the backfield to create space for wide receivers. And I don't know why Desmond Ridder couldn't do the same thing. And maybe that comes with experience, but Heinicke is just like, you know, it's a Ryan Fitzpatrick light thing where you're going to have games like you did now where he was in control. And then 2 weeks later, he's going to throw four picks. I think it's a little too late. I think the Falcons are now, they have to win out and they need a lot of help. They're down to like, I think the New York Times has it at like 16 or 17% chance of making the playoffs. But it's a bummer because you see what it can be. You know, Kyle Pitts catches a long touchdown. So, you know, like this team looks good.
Bijan looked really good.
Looked good.
Like, yeah, so I think that's one of my two thoughts. Like one of my thoughts here would be, yes, the Falcons team is ready to win. Like the Falcons team is ready to win. I had them as a dark horse going into the year. And I think to some degree, you know, making this like a developmental year for Desmond Ridder really stung them, right? Like and like undermined where this team maybe could have been at this point in the year. My second thought is like, could Taylor Heinicke,
no,
like, could the rest
no.
of
huh? No, I know you're going to say that. No.
I'm not going to say. Here's what I think. Like, and I love Taylor. He's a great guy. And like, here's what I think though. Like, and it's not that he can be somebody's starter. When you have like a young quarterback in like year three, is he the guy who you bring in where he's going to be able to, like, having him on the roster is going to tell you whether or not the young guy you have is a guy you should go forward with, right? In other words, like, he's the barometer. Like, he's like your quarterbacking barometer where you bring him in, and if you're like, oh my God, we should go to Taylor Heinicke, well, then you've made your decision on your young guy. You know what I mean? Like, because I do think, like, Taylor is at that level where he is significantly better than a failing young quarterback. So having him on your roster will essentially tell you if your young quarterback is not good enough. You know what I mean?
Taylor Heinicke's the guy you bring in, I think, to
he's like the quarterback barometer.
What I thought you were going to say is, could you talk yourself into bringing him back and having him be the quarterback for next year? And I was like, no, absolutely not. You cannot do that. Taylor Heinicke's the guy you bring in to let everybody know that they're on notice, right? Like Taylor Heinicke is what's like the real world.
Because Taylor, the thing about Taylor is too, is he's going to like win the locker room.
Like he should, yeah. Like he's going to bang around. He's going to just like throw crazy touchdowns. You know, he's going to do, it's almost like, it's like when the board brings in a consultant and then the CEO is like, oh no, I'm in trouble. Like if you're the quarterback.
In retrospect, he was like the worst thing possible to put behind Carson Wentz last year when you look back.
Probably. Yeah.
Like a guy who struggles to relate with his teammates, who's never won the locker room in all his years in the NFL, and you bring in Taylor Heinicke, it's like the worst thing you possibly do.
Yeah. Sorry, Charlie. The Colts, meanwhile, I think are still hanging. The Colts are still hanging on to that last playoff spot. But I really do think, I mean, there are some surging teams behind them. And at this point, so the Colts are holding on to the 7th seed, but then you have the Texans, you have the Bengals, you have the Steelers, you have the Raiders, who
Raiders still in it
could win out. I mean, you know,
and then Jared Stidham and the Broncos.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
They're right there. Yep.
So I think the Colts had a wonderful season. I think we should recognize how good that is. I do think they're running out of gas a little bit. They could not protect Gardner Minshew. and they couldn't get after Taylor Heinicke, and that's a bad combination late in the season.
But on balance, like, great first year for Shane.
Oh, 100%. I think,
phenomenal first year. It does look like they're going places now.
I wrote that he could be a coach of the year. I still believe that. I still think he should be in the conversation. Lions beat the Vikings.
Stefanski's running away with that one, I think. But
Joe Flacco's running away with that. Lions 30, Vikings 24. I'll just say this. I mean, great for the Lions. The first time they've won a division title since 1993. I think this is a push. You know, when the Dan Campbell hire was made, there were a lot of people, you know, and the coaching industry is of particular interest to me, and I cover it kind of in particular over above everything else in the NFL, and just because I think it's fascinating. But the Dan Campbell hire was not popular in the coaching world. I thought a lot of people thought he was just sort of this motor mouth that would come up and say a bunch of ridiculous stuff and didn't have the ability to put a staff together. The Lions were patient. They saw it. And I would argue that the Dan Campbell thing was almost the precursor to a lot of these trends that we're seeing now, like the D'Amico Ryans thing, where you need a former player who's an alpha to be in charge of that locker room, A, and B, you know, in a way was sort of the precursor to the whole Deion craze, right? Like, you need someone who's out there. Well, you need someone who's going to take the heat. You need someone who's going to put it on them. And so, and Dan Campbell
and
was that
Antonio
guy.
Tony Pierce.
I think he's going to get that job.
I mean, I think it's like, honestly, so I think it's like this generational thing that a lot of us is a blind spot for a lot of us that are older, right? In that, like, and I this is going to sound stupid. We'll go back to the third grade football team that my son was on this year. Like, one thing I noticed, like, coaching is how we had a great group of kids. They were awesome. But it's so hard to get this generation for them all to pay attention to anything at once. Whereas, like, when we were kids, you'd be scared not to listen to your coach, right? Like, when you were third grade, fourth grade, like, legitimately afraid not to listen to your coach because of what might happen after.
Yeah.
It's just different now. And so, like, when I watched one of the Deion videos, I saw he was at a practice, and I don't know why it stuck out to me, but it stuck out to me how every kid on that field, their eyes were locked in on him, right? Like, they were all, like, just hanging on every word. And I just thought about how hard that is to get with this generation, right? With this generation of kids that comes up differently, that, you know, just they need to know why. They aren't automatically going to follow you, right? And so I kind of, like, look at it like, okay, like, when Mike Vrabel stands in the front of a meeting room, right? All those guys are paying attention.
Right.
When Dan Campbell stands in front of the meeting room, all those guys are paying attention. When D'Amico Ryan stands in front of the meeting room, all those guys are paying attention. And, like, eventually you do have to show that you can really do the job, right? Like, that's part of it. Like, so eventually you have to show that you're going to give the guys in the locker room the tools to be successful, or you become, you know, a glorified cheerleader. But the advantage that you have, like, how you're playing from ahead when you have that to begin with, Connor, like, right? Because we all look at scheme and, like, who's got the best offense and who gets the most. But, like, at the beginning of it, you have to have that. You have to have investment. And those guys can get it right away.
Yeah.
And so if those guys are good coaches beyond that, like, they walk in and from day one they have that investment, right? You're playing with house money. And, like, we can laugh about what Dan Campbell said in his opening press conference all we want. You know what he had? He had his locker room from the start.
Yep.
And so when you start to teach them things and you're putting in systems and you're doing all of this different stuff, it's yes, sir, no, sir. Like, they're listening to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't have to get the buy-in. So that makes the job less complicated. And I think, like, so I think it's, like, a big advantage that a lot of these guys have. And then if they show they can coach, like, well, now you're rolling. Right? And, you know, so, like, that's why I think you see it with Antonio Pierce. You know, like, it's just, if you've got the respect of the locker room and they're going to follow what you say, well then, okay, like, now you've already cleared the first hurdle. If you have great answers and you have great stuff you're teaching and you can't get them to listen, well then all that other stuff's worthless. You know what I mean? It's just worthless. 100%. And I can remember having a conversation with Mike McDaniel about this, like, a few years ago. And it's just something that kind of has taken on different context when I think about all of this stuff. But was a conversation I was having with him, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And like, it was a very real comment that like, I need to be the smartest guy in the room to have a chance.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And he knew it. And he's so self-aware. That's why that works. Right. Because he knows he has to clear a hurdle that D'Amico Ryans and Dan Campbell and Mike Vrabel have already cleared when they take the job.
Yeah. My only other thought on this game was that if you played me the last Vikings drive of the first half and the first Vikings drive of the second half, I would have said, this is the best team in the NFL. And Nick Mullins is an absolute firebrand. But Nick Mullins, I don't know if anyone remembers this.
Him.
Nick Mullins, there was like a Monday Night Football game like 4 years ago when he was on the 49ers and he threw like 4 touchdowns. And during the postgame show, they had Brett Favre call in because Nick Mullins was like on the TV set after the game, and Nick Mullins went to Southern Miss. Mm-hmm. And so they had Brett Favre call the NFL Network set to congratulate him. And he was like crying. And I was like, this is a great moment. And then we never heard from Nick Mullins again. And now he's back, which is great. I think he's great. Pay no attention to the 4 interceptions. He's going to lead the Vikings to the playoffs. Just watch. I like Nick Mullins.
They're right there, too. They're right there.
They're right there. And forgive me, by the way, I'm battling through a vicious Christmas head cold because apparently no one tells anyone they're sick anymore. We did that for a little while during the pandemic. And now when you gather with family, it's just like, surprise, you're going to go home with an illness.
But it's worse than before. It's worse than before because you're afraid that if you tell somebody you have the sniffles, the room will clear out. So like now you're going the extra mile to hide it sometimes probably, right?
I know. It's like, gosh. Now it's like all you just load up on makeup and Advil cold and sinus and you try to get through it. Dolphins 22, Cowboys 20. My observation here was that I really wanted to see the Dolphins win a game like this, and not just a game like this, meaning a team with a winning record, but in the rain, Tyreek Hill, not necessarily a major factor. You had to rely on physicality, and Tua had to manage some mucky situations. And I'm not saying he was phenomenal, but he got out of there with a victory. And the defense, I mean, this was a very physical game. I mean, some of the hardest hits I've seen in a game all season. And the Dolphins were like, okay, we can win this way now. And I do think that's a big confidence builder for them.
That 3rd and 2 at the end of the game too, like said everything. Like I think that 3rd and 2, that was like, not to get too technical, but that was a gap run. It was your third string running back running behind a pulling guard. You know what I mean? Like that is like about as downhill as it gets. And like, I think the confidence Mike McDaniel had to go to Jeff Wilson at the end of the game and being able to put that thing away, I think speaks loudly about like how far they've come. And I know all those guys had talked about how they collapsed in December last year, and like being in position now where you can play competent defense and you are physical enough to grind out those yards, like they're a more versatile group than they were last year. Like last year, they were explosive. They were fun. They were all those different things. Like I think like what we saw in that Cowboys game was like, this is a team that can win in different ways now. Doesn't need to just, you know, throw for 350 and have Tyree go for 200 yards. Like they're multidimensional. And I think that that's really, really important because when you get to the playoffs, like you have to win games different ways. Like there might be one game where you're winning at 10-6. There might be another game where you're winning at 31-28 based on the elements, based on the opponent, based on whatever it is. And like the Dolphins look way more equipped now to win different types of games. Where I think like last year, if you took them out of their element a little bit and like forced them to play left-handed, they'd be in real trouble.
Literally forced them to play left-handed, right?
Well, yeah, I guess in their case, it would be forced them to play right-handed, right?
Yeah. The Cowboys are kind of like, they're now wearing the Dolphins hat, where it's like, okay, your one signature win this year was kind of Philly, you know? And now, how does that look? You know what I mean? And you get into this situation where you're kind of being pushed around, and I know I'm way ahead of myself, but, you know, we're talking about head coaches and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, what if, you know, you and I had both kind of written a little bit about Seattle. If Pete Carroll retires, Dan Quinn could go there. It's a nice story. You know, if Seattle decides they don't want to go with an offensive play caller, which they might because you got Sean McVay and you have, you know, Kyle Shanahan in your division, you might need to score 50 points a game and you might want to go in a different direction. But let's say Seattle shows some degree of interest in Dan Quinn. If you're Jerry Jones and you're stumbling down the stretch again, you get smoked in the playoffs by one of these teams in the NFC, do you all of a sudden say, uh-oh, like, you know, I either got to hold on to Dan Quinn, I got to fire everybody, I got to start over. Like, Dallas, to me, is one of those where I got my finger on the button there. I'm like, something's going to happen.
Yeah. So Dallas is interesting just because I think, you know, the age of the owner, the makeup of the roster, like, you know, is now the time. And does Jerry view it as, like, I'm going to lose Dan Quinn if I don't make a move now? That game, like, I believe, is that Sunday night? Monday night? No, Saturday night, right?
Ugh.
Cowboys Lions Saturday night? They're taking another Saturday night away from us, Connor.
It's got to stop this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I will. And later in the show, maybe I can defend myself in my Christmas take.
Yep. Saturday night, 8:15.
I know you agree with it. Yeah. So, I mean, I think, like, if now you've lost three straight, you know, that Commanders game to me is irrelevant. Like, if you win that Commanders game, congrats. But if you lose three straight and then go out in the first round of the playoffs, where does that leave you?
I mean, it's just different, right?
And I never would have thought that because I thought Mike McCarthy was doing a great job this year. But this Lions game almost, like, even though, like, we know the Cowboys are in the playoffs and everything else, like, this feels like almost, like, I don't want to say like a must win for that coaching staff, but a very important one for the coaching staff.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and I don't even know if the answer is keeping Dan Quinn at that point. You know what I mean? Like, you might, and it's, they've put themselves
Bill in Belichick.
Yeah. I would love it. Please.
If the Cowboys make a change, I would not rule that out.
Really?
I would not rule that out. Yeah.
God, I hope so.
And I don't think that right now I'd say, like, Mike deserves the benefit of the doubt and the respect for what he's done there and all of that, you know. But if they're going to make a change, I would not rule out Jerry taking a swing at Bill.
Jets Commanders, Jets win.
By the way, just take note of what, just, I mean, like, if you want to look at it, like, take note of, like, the things that Bill said about the Jones family earlier in the year, too. Like, he was, he threw them a few bouquets, so.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to, if he says more than two words at a press conference, you always kind of perk up a little bit. And it's not, and it's not about special teams, then you know you got something there.
It's usually not for no reason.
Jets beat the
sometimes the reason is to wear the media out, but not in this case, I don't think.
The Jets beat the Commanders 30-28. Late rally by the Commanders, who are now going with Jacoby Brissett for some reason. Like, that makes sense if you're Ron Rivera. But really, the nugget out of here was that Brian Costello, who's awesome from the New York Post, broke that Robert Saleh is coming back for next year. You and I both wrote about it. I think we have a similar take here in that, everybody's just like, yeah, because of Aaron Rodgers. I don't think so. I think Robert Saleh earned that fourth year because he cleaned up an absolute trash pile in that organization. And if you go back and you put another head coach in this situation and you have the quarterback going down, you have the Zach Wilson thing, you have all these weird leaks in the building who have been there forever and will always be there. And it's just like all this weird hailstorm of nonsense. I don't think another coach walks out of there on his own two feet. And I think that Robert Saleh has calmed that place down. He's gotten it to a spot where people actually want to play there. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be a lot of fun next year, and he deserves that. I think Woody Johnson, you had to recognize that.
Yeah. I talked to Robert after the game on Sunday about kind of the feeling in the organization on September 10th and the morning of September 11th. And then at 7:45 on the night of September 11th, when Aaron Rodgers is walking out with the flag, and how there was like this sentiment in the organization, right? Like, and that it felt different. Now that all changes four plays later and Aaron Rodgers goes down. But, you know, I do think like, that's not just Aaron Rodgers. I think like Saleh was able to build a really good feeling in that building. And it felt like a place that was on the come. And, you know, even at points this year when that quarterback situation made it impossible, they were still scratching out wins.
Yep.
And look, like, he's got blood on his hands too, that they didn't go out and get a Joe Flacco. Like, now that we've seen what Flacco can be, and they had the Flacco in the building last year, you know, he has blood on his hands for all of that too. But the way he was able to sort of manage the situation and play the cards he was dealt here, I don't think he did the worst coaching job in the world this year either, you know?
No.
And so, like, I think it does make sense if you're Woody Johnson to press reset and try to find out what was going to be in 2023 when you get to 2024. And the good thing is, and this is something that Robert and I talked about too, is you're able to do it with more information now. Like, you have information on what your offensive line is. You have information on what you've got on your coaching staff. You've got information on the guys Aaron wanted to bring with him, right? Your Randall Cobbs, your Alan Lazard. You've got more information than you did a year ago, and that's going to allow them to build in a really responsible way. And so, you know, I think there's a chance that, you know, we get to May and June and, you know, let's look out for the Jets again. And I do think, like, Saleh's ability to kind of keep everything together in what was a little bit of a house fire early in the year is a big part of that.
I think, you know, there's a, in here in New York, the narrative is sort of, you know, everyone's saying, well, we could have been the Bengals and we could have lost our quarterback and we could have still been in playoff contention. Yeah. But you could have also been the 2022 Broncos. You know what I mean? And I do think that there's, and I'm not saying, you know, it could be worse. It could be worse, except what you have, but it could have been a lot worse. And I think in the Jets case, things get a lot harder and a lot worse faster traditionally.
Without Saleh.
And so, yes. Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where.
If there's a silver lining too, they're going to be drafting relatively high. I think they might be on the edge of the top 10. And this is a really good tackle draft. I know we're not going to, probably won't turn on listeners to hear about that this early. But, like, you know, Olufoshana from Penn State, Joe Alt from Notre Dame, you know, the tackle from Georgia, Marius Mims, like, there's like a handful of really good high level tackles. And it looks like the Jets are going to be drafting high enough to get one of them.
Two more games that I want to talk about, and then we'll kind of just lighten around the rest of them. One very quickly, the Giants 33, or the Eagles 33, Giants 25. It's so doom and gloom in Philadelphia, which is just hilarious. And I love it that this team is 11-4, and it's like the sky is falling. The reports that it's the most miserable locker room that you've ever heard, blah, blah, blah. I think this is just a realization that Philly's the best.
I have so much respect. Philly is... I will say this. The Philadelphia fan is like exactly who I am as an Ohio State fan when I'm sitting on the couch firing everybody and trying to take kids' scholarships away. You know, I'm my third Bud Light and like telling, you know, yelling at the TV. Like I feel a real connection to the way that Philly looks at their fans. Don't apologize for having standards, Eagles fans.
Are you a Bud Light drinker during the game? Is that what you drink?
You know, I've tried to go with the light beers. I did IPAs for a while, and that can get a little hairy fast.
So do you have like Bud Light in your house?
I've done Bud Lights, Bud Light, Modelo, Coors Light. Coors Light's like usually the one actually. For Ohio.
So you have like Coors Light in your house, in your fridge.
Yes.
You could walk upstairs right now and get a Coors Light.
Yeah, I have IPAs and Coors Lights, yes.
Nice. Okay. Interesting.
I'll send you a picture.
I did want to know what you're. It's like cribs.
I will give you photographic evidence, so this can be verified after the game.
Yeah,
after,
I just think everybody likes to know what's in other people. I wanted to know what you got for Christmas, and I wanted to know what's in your refrigerator. But
the Eagles, like I don't honestly like I say this. I don't blame them for the hysteria because here's where I do relate with it. It's like where I think like when you're a fan. And you see like what you think is a special group of players and you feel like it's slipping away, you are going to be upset, you know? And I think that that's probably the way the Eagle fan looks at it right now is we've got this special group of players. We've got like Lane Johnson and Brandon Graham and Jason Kelsey and Fletcher Cox. And those guys are going to be gone soon. We've got like a corner Darius Slay and James Bradbury. And those guys are going to be gone soon. And so, like, you look at it, you see, like, a bunch of, like, really good players in their prime. Then the older players who are going to be gone, you've got a quarterback who, like, you just signed to a big-time deal. I don't blame them. Like, you'd be a little on edge, too, if that was your team, wouldn't you?
Sure. Absolutely.
Like, because you feel like you're in this window of opportunity, and if it feels like the season's slipping away, well, you know, I know how that feels. That can feel like 10 seasons is slipping away.
Yeah.
It's like, is this? Are we losing? Are we missing our chance now? I think that's what that is.
I think it's just coming back to what it's always been. Like, you know, it was a schemed up offense last year.
Yep.
Shane Steichen did a lot to put Jalen in a lot of good spots, and two things can be true. Jalen can be a really good quarterback, and an offensive coordinator can do a really good job of putting him in spots where he can succeed regularly, mm-hmm. right? Those both can be true. But if you look at, you know, the Eagles, like if you look at the Jalen contract versus like the Lamar contract, for example, like, and part of that was leverage, certainly. But like, if you talk to people whose job it is to, you know, write these things and negotiate these things, the Lamar contract is far more
restrictive,
befitting of a franchise quarterback. You know what right. I'm saying? Like the Jalen one is like, okay, you're going to get like a quarter of this money, you know? And then we'll see where it goes. Whereas Lamar is like most of your money. Well, you're getting like $180 million in over 2 years, whereas Jalen's getting like 60.
Well, you know what it is, Connor. It's the benefit of doing the contract early.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the benefit. Like the Ravens played it out and like ran it all the way to the point where they had to franchise him, right? Yeah. Where the Eagles are coming to Jalen 2 years before the expiration of his rookie deal, because presumably he'd have the fifth year option picked up. And so like that's the benefit in going in and doing the deal early. Now, there's risk when you go and do the deal early, obviously, because it's going to cost you more in the here and now. We just talked about that with Russell Wilson.
But you're not going to be paying him $65 million a year in 3 years. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, so, but like that's the benefit of it, is that you're going to be able to spread the cap out. You're going to be able to do all those different cap tricks, and you're probably going to get him to take a little bit less in guarantees than if you force him to take on the 2 years of extra injury risk and you have to put a tag on him.
I still think they're going to win like two games in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Is that a failure if you almost make it back to the Super Bowl after losing the Super Bowl? No, historically not. Well, you know.
Well, unless you're looking at Connor Orr's picks, you'd have to say that they win out, right? And they get the Cardinals and the Giants.
If they lose to the Cardinals, it will be a full-scale meltdown, and I am here for it.
If they lose to the Cardinals, I'm starting out my New Year's Day by listening to WIP online.
Oh,
so.
Baby. That's what I'm talking about. The other big one here was that the Chiefs lost to the Raiders 20-14. And now we're talking about, after years of saying, look how good this team is going to be when we get rid of Eric Bieniemy, to, I hope Ron Rivera fires Eric Bieniemy so we can bring him back and add some accountability to this offense before the playoffs, is just so funny to me. Like, that he was holding you back. He was holding you back. I have no dog in this fight at all, but the Chiefs are so out of options. They can't add a wide receiver. They can't make anything else happen. And so right now you're looking at, please God bring Eric Bieniemy back so he can yell at people because there's no accountability, is such a funny place to be for a team.
I think this is the 2006 Patriots. I think this is like where, like back then, if you look, like you'll see, and this is when Brady was really breaking through as a player and becoming a top level quarterback. The Patriots were like, okay, like the guy's won three Super Bowls. He should be able to do more with less. So like, let's let David Givens go. And, you know, we're in a contract dispute with Deion Branch. Okay, well, that got a little too hot, so we're going to trade him. And it's like, go make it work, Tom. You know, we got a good offensive line. We got a good defense. Go make it work, Tom, with Jabbar Gaffney and Doug Gabriel and, you know, broken down Corey Dillon and Lawrence Maroney as a rookie. And, like, I don't know if it's quite, like, to that point personnel-wise, but I think the idea is the same, where it was like, let's see how far we can go with Patrick Mahomes and investing everywhere else and then trusting that he's going to be able to make it work at the skill positions. And look, like I was big on like, let the second round picks develop, let Sky Moore develop, let Rashi Rice develop. And like, let's see where that goes. I think the problem with it is, I don't think Travis Kelce is the same. I mean, whether he's hurt, whatever, he's 34. Like I've been sort of hesitant to say it, 'cause he's an all time great player. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I just, like, I don't know, Connor. I feel like I've been seeing it all year. Like, he just doesn't look like the same sort of, like, we got to build an entire game plan to stop this guy type of weapon anymore, you know? And if now you're not asking Rashee Rice to be a compliment to Travis Kelce, you're asking him to be your number one, that's a totally different thing. Now defenses can play you a certain way. And now there's going to be more on Patrick Mahomes to make it work on a down-to-down basis. And so, like, I sort of look at it the same way I, you know, remember seeing those 2006 Patriots. And, you know, the question then becomes, if they are out in the divisional round, do they do what the 2007 Patriots did, which was go wild.
Yeah.
And go sign Randy Moss and Wes Welker and, you know, all of that. So, you know, I think it's sort of where the Chiefs are right now is like that Travis Kelce, like it's the combination of trading Tyreek Hill 2 years ago and Travis Kelce getting older. You know, now it feels like the dynamic around Patrick Mahomes is much different than it was before.
And it's weird too. I talked to, for the Year in Sports issue, I talked to Andy Reid and I talked to a lot of the Chiefs, you know, Chiefs offensive staff, tight ends coach. And the idea was that, like, yeah, I mean, Travis Kelce is a great player, but that the best is yet to come. But, and, you know, it does lead me to believe it's like, do we think he is a little banged up? Do we think he's a little hurt? And do we think he's just not getting, do we think he's not getting the support from the rest of the offense? You know, he's making a lot of openings for other people, but is he, you know, is nobody helping him, you know?
He's been incredibly durable. Like, for a guy at that position, those guys always get hurt. Tight end is like one of those positions where it's really, really hard to stay healthy, which is why you see so many guys like that are out for half the year at that position or out for entire seasons at that position. And the reason why is because you're involved in both the run game, and the pass game, you're running through like linebackers and safeties to catch the ball. Like, those guys take an absolute beating, you know? They do. And so, like, I think eventually this was going to catch up with Travis Kelce.
You almost said Taylor Swift.
Maybe in year 11.
Huh? Did you almost say Taylor Swift?
No.
I heard like a
Travis Swift.
I heard like a Travis. I heard like a ta, you know.
A Tay instead of
Maybe
Tra.
Like a Tay. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that that's the difference for them.
Running down the rest of these, I mean, we already talked about the Broncos. The Patriots, you know, good for them. Chad Ryland hit a big 56-yard field goal. I'm sure Bill Belichick's psyched about that. The Bears just keep winning now, 27-16 over the Cardinals. It's hilarious. Matt Eberflus is going to have this team at 8-9, and no one's going to know what to do with them. I still think they make a change and keep the GM. That's my thought as of right now. But, you know, Justin Fields looks good.
I mean, I think the team president, Kevin Warren, is the wild card in all.
Yes.
That.
And I think that everybody is on edge with that guy, you know, and mm-hmm. he is sort of the real power player there. Buccaneers beat the Jaguars. It's disappointing. I mean, I thought that the quotes from Trevor Lawrence after the game, he said, it looks like we're not even practicing during the week, is fairly eye-opening. And I'll just say this. I mean, my one takeaway here is if the Jaguars don't make the playoffs, that is one of the biggest shots to the foot that you can possibly do as an organization. The entire AFC was opening wide open for you. Like, I mean, this was a wide fairway.
This was your breakthrough year. Year three for your young quarterback. At one point, I'm counting it up now. I think they were, 9-3? Is that right? Yeah, they were 8-3. At one point, they were 8-3. Now they're 8-7. They better beat the Panthers on Sunday, man. like if they lose the Panthers, look out.
Browns beat the Texans 36-22. No one can stop Joe Flacco. He's on my fantasy football team. He's taken us to the finals.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's a resourceful.
Yes. I actually have a so if you're listening to this on Wednesday or if you're listening to this on Thursday morning, I have a column about fantasy football championships. I don't ever write about fantasy, but I really I thought it was kind of cool. I urge you to check
that
out. Browns just keep rolling. Joe Flacco is going to take this team to the playoffs. They're playing on Thursday night this week. Very exciting.
I'm fired up for that one. Should be interesting.
And then the Packers barely beat the Panthers, and now they've suspended Jaire Alexander for crashing the coin toss, which is just the most amazing, stupid NFL thing that I've ever heard.
How did I make? They suspended him?
They suspended him because he was not one of the in-game captains, but he just went out anyway. And apparently, almost
screwed. Is this like when the backup? This is like when if a backup quarterback started warming up without anybody telling.
Not even warming up, putting his helmet on and just running into the game, and he made the call. He made the wrong call. So I guess if I'm understanding it correctly, he wanted them to defer, and I think Jair Alexander chose to play defense, which is different than deferring. There's a difference. And so he messed it up and he crashed the coin toss and he said he did it because he was from Charlotte and he felt like he should be out there and he got suspended for a game. So awesome. That's just like,
we need to wrap the podcast up so I can research this situation more. Somehow I missed this.
This is like if
he also used the wrong phrase. Instead of it's only fitting, I don't think coach, he said it's only suiting.
Oh, it's so good. And please look at this today, because the media, he did interviews with the media today and he just comes out in like a pair of Terminator shades. Like, yeah, I did it. And it is so good. I mean, the Packers could still make the playoffs and Jair Alexander is suspended for a game because he crashed the coin toss. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened in the NFL.
I need to know everything about
this.
Did he like, what was he planning on? Like, was he planning it out on Thursday and Friday? Was it a spur of the moment thing? Did the other captains know it was going to happen? I say other captains, but you know, he wasn't one.
So good.
Yeah.
That would be like me gaining publishing privileges for SI and so, just like the world's, like I don't cover baseball and the World Series starts and I just start posting about the World Series on the website. Just like, yeah, I figured I like baseball. Figured I should.
All right. So here's the full quote. It's only suiting. I don't think coach knew I was from Charlotte. So maybe you want to tell him. Maybe then he would have been cool with it. I don't know.
I love it. I think if
Jair Alexander went to like Matt LaFleur and said like, hey, listen, man, like I'm from Charlotte. I'm not saying like you need to make me a captain this week, but it'd be pretty cool. My guess is Matt LaFleur probably have made him a game. He's captain.
Like, yeah, all right, you know? Whatever. Sure.
Yeah.
No, but instead it's just, you know, I love the, it's like having young kids. I understand it. It's like, I'd rather get yelled at than to ask you if it's okay. But the fact that it has resulted,
better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
But the fact that it has resulted in a one game suspension is just beautiful. And that is where we end the Christmas podcast. Albert, thanks as always for being here.
I just found his shades, by the way. This is fantastic.
So good.
The hood up too.
Yeah, just look, watch it, enjoy it, and get inspired by it, because you know what? If your boss tells you to do something or not to do something, just do it anyway.
He's like laughing during the interview too.
He's going to enjoy a week off. That guy is going to really enjoy a week off. Good for him. It's a long NFL season. And
it's a personal bye week.
I'm going to encourage Matt and Gilberto on the Thursday show to devote all 45 minutes of their episode to this.
There you go.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening, and we'll be back next week.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Devin Whitmire. People from South Carolina, like myself, are proud of their state, but even we don't know every nook and cranny or every piece of culture or history. To explore places that are off the beaten path, you have to talk to the people there, because their stories make everything come together. From Discover South Carolina, it's the Palmetto Porch, premiering September 18th. To learn more, visit scpalmettoporch.com.